Welcome to episode 12 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and today with me is my co-host, Matt Mueller.
Yay, yay.
And from behind the camera, today we're bringing him up front, it's producer Jim Viscardi.
What?
And today, guys, we have a special show where we're going to take a little bit more of a focus for this kind of show because we have something big to talk about, which is, of course, the release of Captain Marvel, which is going to be hitting theaters right about when you hear this podcast. Yeah. And so we're going to have a lot to kind of talk about that today. But, you know, in fairness to the other side of the fandom, we're also going to be doing a bunch of DC breakdown because there is some big things happening on the DC side now. And as per producer Jim Viscardi over here, we have something special for you guys. Something just breaking that I think you'll like because it has to do with Avengers Endgame. So stay tuned with us. If you want to listen to the show, you can always find it on the site, comicbook.com. We have an RSS feed where you can subscribe. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, iHeartRadio. Subscribe any of those places. And when you do, be sure to leave us a great review because I'll tell you why at the end of the show when we do something fun for all our fans who are leaving some great reviews out there. And we thank you for that. Now, that said, let's get into it. So, we're going to be talking about Captain Marvel at the end because we're going to do a whole deep dive into that.
Yeah,
so, let's start with DC today. Some big things happening over on the DC side in both the movie universe and the TV universe. Let's start with TV. Arrow is coming to an end. Yeah, man, it's crazy. Like, just as soon as we launched this last show, Stephen Amell's like, oh, nice episode. Hey, here's one. Arrow's coming to an end next season. So next season, which will be season eight, it gets 10 episodes, and that's going to wrap it up for Arrow. And this was shocking to a lot of fans, but not like so many. I mean, there's also a group of fans like our own kind of DC TV team here at comicbook.com that were just kind of pulling a Nikki Fink, like told you so, because I know Russ Burlingame, who is like head of our DC TV universe team here, has been predicting that, yeah, Stephen Amell would be kind of moving on from Arrow and the show itself would be done next year. There's in the upcoming Crisis crossover, which will be, I think, isn't that the next big one?
That's for
the
big one.
For the next fall, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so Crisis, which, you know, has been built up since The Flash started, they'll have a big Crisis event, and then, you know, it'll be a much reordered DC TV universe that comes out of the other end is what we're beginning to see, and that'll begin with Arrow ending.
The craziest part of this all is, like, I don't think we would have gotten to where we are today with as much, like, superhero TV if Arrow didn't work. Like, if Arrow Season 2
I agree.
Did not work in the way that it did, which is arguably probably the best season of Arrow.
Yeah, I mean, yes, Arrow Season 2, especially the back half, yep, stands up as probably the best season.
Like we would not have gotten the other CW DC shows. Like, we wouldn't have gotten the Arrowverse. Like, it had its own freaking name. But, like, I feel like that show opened up a lot of doors to show what superhero stuff on TV could look like.
Yeah, and it did. I mean, Season 2 is notable if you're not familiar with Arrow because they brought in Slade Wilson, Deathstroke, this whole storyline about Mirakuru, which was this drug that gave people basically superpowers and made them Captain America. It was like a super soldier serum. Yep. And that was when Arrow finally, like, really jumped from just trying to be, like, street-level dark Batman to kind of embracing the more fantastical superhero stuff. And when that did work and people really embraced it, it did open the door for The Flash, which then opened the door for basically everything with it.
It's just funny because they jumped, like, so hard from Arrow, because, like, especially where Arrow started.
Yeah.
And then you see how just that second season was like, okay, we can do The Flash now. One of the most, like, polar opposite characters and rogue galleries and all that stuff. So, yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, but it's coming to an end. I think there's a lot of people in the fandom who would probably say, you know, it's time to put this one out to pasture. I'm still an Arrow fan. I still watch every week, and but I watch it because now, like, I'm just one of those
invested
fans.
Like, are you?
Because you're 7 years in.
Yeah, because I'm 7 years in, and I just like to see my old familiar friends come along across my TV screen every week. But yeah, so I mean, I'm be excited to see kind of how things evolve, especially with DC Universe now kind of gaining steam slowly but surely. So RIP Arrow. Well, we'll be covering and everything that happens on that front and what it means for the other shows and all of that. So stay tuned. The other thing that's happening is on the movie side, we got an update the Suicide Squad. James Gunn's kind of soft reboot of Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, we put the in there. Yeah, I'm sure, I hope they make that a joke, by the way. Are we some sort of Suicide Squad? I'd be like, no, we're the Suicide Squad. But Idris Elba is replacing Will Smith as Deadshot in the DCEU.
Luther's in the DCEU.
Just got Terrence Howard.
Yeah, they just were like, well, let's just handsome this up a bit and like throw a little bit of better acting behind it. And
I liked Will Smith.
I like Will Smith Deadshot too. I love him too.
Elba.
That's more of a black actor joke about black actors taking other black actors' jobs. But I'm
down for this.
Yeah, like, I'm down for that too. I don't think anybody. I mean, this is like the one time we've had a DC casting where everybody's like,
I mean, Elba stood out in this Christmas.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it doesn't matter what movie he's in.
And he's already becoming a supervillain in Hobbs and Shaw. Yeah, like, he's awesome. I mean, doing everything. He's cutting records. He's making rap videos. Like,
so this is the first main, like, big switcheroo that we've had post.
Yeah. Some people would argue how big means, but, like, yes.
I mean, Deadshot. I mean, yeah, if it was,
Slipper Snyder era.
That's a movie lead.
Yeah. That's the biggest one, yeah. They're doing the whole Don Cheadle, Terrence Howard thing. So, like, yeah.
Yeah, but that was self. Man. Okay, well,
we're not going to get too deep.
There is kind of breaking news or breaking news as it's happening. There is the rundown of other characters that should be appearing in this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you want to take people through, I mean, you can. They're not going to know who any of these people are because James Gunn's basically rumored to be picking like the most obscure
which
characters.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, because he's just going to kill them.
Yeah.
But like, I read this list. I'm just going to go through the list really quickly. So, Ratcatcher. King Shark, which is, okay, fine. We know who King Shark is.
King Shark's a biggie.
Polka Dot Man and Peacemaker, right? Like, I get it. James Gunn takes obscure characters and makes big deals out of them. Those are obscure characters.
Yeah, but this is a movie, like, you have to remember, this is a movie where half the fun could be James Gunn horribly murdering.
That's true.
Like Polka Dot
Ratcatcher could be amazing.
If Ratcatcher is not the Slipknot of this movie, like...
I'm so looking forward to that. Like, I didn't think I would.
Just seeing Idris Elba's Deadshot try to deal with all of these, like, B-list crazy people, like, I just always want to wait and see because it's James Gunn. There has to be another shoe that's going to drop with this.
That's true.
And this makes me want...
It's just weird when you put, like, Deadshot and Harley Quinn, theoretically, we're assuming Harley Quinn is coming back in this, next to those characters. Like, it just feels like you went from... You have two... fairly A-list characters to the F-list.
But I mean, that's kind of like, if you look at the first Suicide Squad, it's not like Captain Boomerang outside of comics is a... People look at him as a D-list character. Who the hell is that? Like, he doesn't belong next to Deadshot. To us, yes, he's got history.
Right.
But I would say half that cast outside of Killer Croc, they don't know Katana. Like, they don't...
No. Katana definitely got a way more mainstream attention thanks to... The DC superhero girls,
yes, but I don't think when that movie came out, I don't think it was up there.
I don't think we need to get too crazy on this because I still think, like I said, it's James Gunn. Like it could almost be like a red shirt
joke.
Like if you see them on one side of a room, you see like Deadshot and Harley Quinn, and maybe like,
you want to see Ratcatcher in the Suicide Squad too.
I want to see him do what Gail Simone did for Catman. Like I want to see that.
Yeah.
Him to take these characters and make something.
All right, well, we'll let it to the people. Let us know what you think about this selection. Is it too weird? Do you think something great's coming out of it? Hashtag Comic Book Nation. We're going to keep it moving on. We're going to talk a little bit about... We were going to talk about some shakeups in the Warner Brothers executives, but I think we're just going to save time and move past that. Head of Warner Brothers, the guy who's supposed to be turning around the DCEU, that's getting shaky, so... We're just going to move past that one.
He may not have a job by the time the episode's
out.
Yeah,
exactly. So let's talk about Batman, because that's going to still happen regardless. And we're hearing there was a rumored list of people who could play the new Batman. I'll go through it. Jack Rayner, from the guy from Transformers 4 with the gross Romeo Juliet laws. Alexander Ludwig, the guy from The Hunger Games. Jack O'Connell, the guy from... he was in that Angelina Jolie movie, whatever that was called, about the soldier. I forget what it's called. But Aaron Taylor Johnson, who was Quicksilver in Age of Ultron, and Nicholas Hoult, who's Beast in the current X-Men movies.
Hopefully it's anyone but those last
two. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, this list has already been disputed and kind of debunked. But these are names that are, I mean, and it is kind of fairly, it's hard to tell because these are names that come up fairly often.
Right. But I think these names, if anything, give you an idea of potentially who they're looking to cast from an age standpoint, even from a look standpoint. I think, you know, it gives us what I hope is and it's not a Warner Brothers type thing to do. We get someone who's kind of a total surprise, who doesn't necessarily have a ton of cachet. Because my thing with Batman is, Batman sells because he's Batman. It doesn't matter who Batman is. Like, people are going to go out and see that movie. It truly doesn't matter. And so I hope that, like, they just go with someone who no one saw coming and doesn't have, like, five big box office movies to his name.
To be fair, we should add that you would get a ton of traffic out of that. Like, that would be a ton of a traffic generator if they do, with people being like, who the hell is this? And people freaking out about this.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
People are going to freak out regardless.
No matter what. But, yeah. Like, yeah, total unknown. Trust me. I was live on air on a podcast when Jesse Eisenberg got cast as Lex Luthor. Like, in the middle of the podcast, it shut down everything and people freak out. That was amazing. So, I mean, I, for one, love that stuff, so I'd like to see that happen, too. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, this list has been already kind of disputed. We still don't know. I'm sure we're going to find out by the end of the year.
Yep.
We'll know something. Who knows? We'll see what happens at, like, Comic-Con and all those different events. But, yeah, I mean, I hope it's just somebody who's really good at playing, like, a young, slightly crazy-looking guy who would be good. And I hope he doesn't look – and it's got to be somebody who looks young, like a young Bruce Wayne, but also doesn't look like baby Batman in the suit.
I actually liked on that list, I mean, whether it's – you know, that list ends up being – disproven or not or whatever, but I actually liked Rayner on that list. I thought he looked the part. Like, I was like going through his images and stuff, I was like, okay,
yeah, no, he's all right. I like Taylor Johnson too, but like, he doesn't, I mean, and I knew, that's how I knew early on, like, Quicksilver was gonna die, because that dude doesn't do franchises. He never ever does franchises. He's like one of those actors who would get, like, spiraling and lost and end up in some, like, Dubai hotel room, like, trying to fly like Batman and shit. Like, or I can't curse. Oh my god,
wow, that's
the first curse on the podcast. Oh my god,
what do you think, you're JK?
No, I don't. I'm tired today. I'm really tired. JK. My brain's not like on full center mode, but anyway, I'm already spiraling in a hotel room of my own mind up here, so we're gonna keep it moving. I mean, I'm not thrilled by anybody on the list. I think, like Jim, I want to be surprised.
Yeah, I'm cool with
that.
So,
all right, so moving right along, that does it for DC, I believe. Mm-hmm. And next, we got something special for you. Producer Jim Fitzcardi put this in special for you guys, the fans. A new Avengers Endgame footage description.
Oh god.
We're gonna put that on a shirt.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my god, that is the first comic book nation shirt.
Yep. Yeah. Footage, yeah. All right, so
god,
I will read. You want me to read, or Jim, do you want to do the honors?
Go for it. Yeah, well, I'll set it up. So Disney held their annual shareholders meeting. This is separate from their quarterly earnings calls. This one was held in St. Louis. They invite basically anyone and everyone who has a stock in Disney to come out. There's generally, there's a Q&A section at the end of it, but usually Bob Iger comes out and goes, look at all the cool stuff that we have. Part of the cool stuff that he had was footage that no one else has seen from Avengers Endgame. And so what, you know, normally it's like, oh, whatever, it's new
footage.
Do
we know how many feet of it he brought? I'm just asking. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But like, so normally at any given day, oh, whatever, it's new footage. But I mean, this is new footage for Avengers Endgame, a movie shrouded in secrecy that, you know, we know, you know, next to nothing about, other than the first trailer and other random things we got from toys. And so this, to me, there's a bunch of stuff in this that could be cool, could not be cool. But anyway, do you want to read it or do you want me to do it?
I got it. I'll do a dramatic reading of this. Here we go. Like Michael Shannon style. No, I'm just kidding. I'll just do it.
Man.
All right. Here it is. The Avengers sitting in the room from the first trailer. Captain Marvel is there. Nebula says that Thanos would go to the garden after his plan. Captain Marvel says they will go there and use the stones to undo it. Then Rocket, Thor, Nebula, Captain America, Rhodey, and Black Widow are in space, and Rocket says, who has never been in space before? Raise your hand. He then says, don't puke on my ship. The end. And this sounds, this sounds like exactly what we've been talking about. I mean, we've been talking heavily about on the show about the marketing for this Avengers Endgame and like Game of Thrones and what we do want to see and don't want to see. And this sounds like the kind of thing I want to see. It's like another just little snippet of section of story that's still from the beginning, teasing like the build up to some kind of mission, but doesn't really tell me anything. But, you know, this one seems a little less dark and a little more humorous, while also kind of giving fans enough of a thrill from, one, seeing Captain Marvel with the Avengers, and two, kind of having her say something like, we're going to use the stones to undo it, which will, of course, fuel, fans, and by fans, I mean us paid to fuel these things into, like, a whole bunch of theories of, you know, what does that mean? What's their plan? How are they going to get to this? You know, now we get a name for where Thanos might be. You know, there's all these little details, and this is such a Russo Brothers type of piece of footage that I can think about and just see it being something like, yeah, real and like good and like the perfect kind of thing for Marvel fans. And like I said, just enough of a tease without too much. So
I hate that I'm accepting.
I mean, the interesting thing about this in this footage is Nebula is part of this, right? So presumably Nebula and Tony have come back and have met up with the Earthbound Avengers and Tony is doing something. Maybe something science bro-y, but
yeah, I mean,
like or he could be dead by this point.
But this, like I said, this is the perfect because there's so much speculation without really showing you or telling you anything at all.
I'm okay if he's dead.
See, Tony could be dead at this point.
I'm okay with that if that's happening.
I'm sure. I'm sure we'll explore that theory. So many others, but that's what we got. Cap. The next Avengers Endgame.
Chances are we'll probably
I won't push
fingers
it
crossed.
Far.
I'd love to get this in like the next trailer or something.
I think this will be a big part of the next. Yeah. It'll probably honestly be like one of the Super Bowl things where
it's just a spot. Spots.
Doesn't need a trailer.
The don't puke in my ship thing is just reeks of Marvel trailer.
Yeah,
that's a great line though. Yeah. That's great.
All right, so the next Avengers Endgame spot, we'll call it for the sake of everybody here. No, what's going to be good is when you start to say the word and then it just comes out.
I hate that I accept it already. Like, oh, you said it and
your brain's already.
And I hate it. I hate myself for it.
All right, well, stay tuned because we are going to get into a deep dive review of Captain Marvel. We'll do some non-spoiler first and then we'll get into the full spoilers discussion. Be here for that.
Spoilers.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right, so Captain Marvel out this weekend. I think what's kind of exciting about Captain Marvel is this is the first Marvel movie where we weren't like 100% already guaranteed sure this was going to be a hit. There's been a lot of crazy stuff going into it with the review bombing and people just tearing apart Brie Larson for some reason. I still don't get Brie Larson's been like the most harmless thing. And they're like, oh, she's blinked. Oh my God. Like the arrogance on her. Keep your eyes open for the fans. Like, you know, it's getting crazy out there. But there was a lot of questions going into this. The way it had to be marketed was kind of, we've been talking and downright fighting about on this show for a while. But we've seen it. I saw it. Matt saw it. Did you see it?
Yep.
Okay. So Jim's seen it. We've all seen it. And yeah, so let's get into this. I think we're going to go around first. We'll each give not too long, somewhere between a tweet and a full review's worth.
Why are you looking at me when you say that?
I know you have a lot of picked up stuff.
Well, I want to start this off by saying, like, we were kind of right in that the trailers had a very hard job of trying to sell this movie while keeping, you know, a lot of the secrets and twists.
Like,
and
it's not a stretch to say from the very moment this movie starts, there are spoiler-worthy things happening that, like, we can't even tell you in this section. So I'll go through and just say, I mean, what Jim said, I put this on Twitter and somehow still got attacked for it, that I was pleasantly surprised by how fun and kind of quirky and cute and, you know, interesting and thrilling this movie was. It's a hard thing to describe because of the nature of the story. It was a very difficult tightrope, and I give a lot of respect to the directors and to Brie Larson because the way they chose to approach the story is really difficult. it's kind of an origin story without being an origin story, because it doesn't, I mean, there is exposition and stuff, but like, it's a lot of implication more than actual exposition. Like, there's a lot of work your brain has to do to put pieces together and kind of formulate what this all is. And there's still questions and stuff that are opened up from it, while still delivering you a story that feels like you get to know a character in a world. And it all kind of works, and they walk that tightrope. They kind of get a little wobbly at times, but they make it through. And like I said, Brie Larson has a tough job in this, because she has to play this very personality-driven character who's being kind of, like, it's not a spoiler to say she's being brainwashed and controlled, and so she can't have full access to who she is or her emotions, which is a major part of the story, but she still has to sell this character, and it's a character who, like, is so personable that there's all these flashes of her personality coming out that have to constantly be, like, repressed or rolled back and things like that. And the whole story is about her of kind of just of self-discovery, right, and self-empowerment. And it was a lot of stuff we thought with, like, you know, very good, you know, feminist themes. People say it's, like, hollow feminist themes, but I didn't think that. I thought it was very good. And there's a lot of subtle heart in this movie without taking away from the momentum of it. And I think, for me, one of the biggest standouts was, what's her name, Latasha Lynch?
Lashana Lynch.
Lashana Lynch, as, it's been butchering.
Maria
Rambo, yeah. And that whole storyline with her and Carol in the scenes with them together, which were very powerful, and kind of just how well, I think, in that scene, like, they subtly tell you a lot about Maria without ever having to see this in just a conversation with her and Carol.
Yeah.
And just kind of says all this kind of very powerful stuff to her, and shades in both, like, you know, their relationship and what it means for both of them as women, and the kind of, and why they were friends, and like why they were the two type of women to kind of both be in the Air Force, both be in this kind of friendship, and what kind of little family structure they had. And they do it very well, like I said, with these kind of real fine brushstrokes that say a lot but don't drag away from the movie. Because I also loved, like, a lot of this movie in the Kree world and all that stuff and the world building it did. And I loved all the doors that opened in the MCU. And young Sam Jackson was, like,
oh, he was great.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed this. And this is a movie, and I know that I enjoyed it because this, I want to go back and see it again. And for me, what was, I think, best of all was that it hit this. I was a 90s kid, and that's where I got my movie magic love from. And this hit those marks. It felt like a 90s movie, especially in the downtown LA in, like, the second act. That whole thing was, like, great. It was just kind of classic buddy cop action movie, and I loved all that. So Captain Marvel, yeah, I'm in for that. And I really want to see where Larson takes this character next.
Well, and I'll build
that
off
was,
yours.
I just want to say that was a very long tweet.
Yeah, right.
I said
thank you, Jim.
I said between tweet and I said between because a tweet and a
I'm
full
gonna get
review.
Murdered if I go that long. No. Building off of what you said, because I agree with a lot of that. One of the biggest things for me, I saw all the hate that Brie Larson got coming into this. She's playing a blank slate, all those things. And I think without going over the same treads as you, I think you're right. I think she, because you have to, half this movie is someone struggling with their place in the world. They don't have access to all of those memories. And one of the biggest things I think is a credit to the directors, Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck. They were able to take a big part of Carol's history in the comics has been struggling with her place in the world, struggling with emotional ties to her past, her memories. It's been a couple of things that come up, like Rogue, taking her memories in the books. Her not, and one of the biggest things is her struggling with emotional ties to memories, because she didn't have, she could remember everything, but she didn't actually have any of the emotional contact, the tether, right? So what they did here was they put their own spin and worked years of history of issues of her encountering her mother and her father and her brother and them essentially losing their sibling and their child, because she doesn't have, she knows that someone's her mother, but she doesn't know why that matters. She doesn't understand. There's no heart there. And it's because it was stolen from her. And here, they tackle that in a very unique way without ever having to go with all the baggage that comes with those storylines in the comics. They found a way to blend that into her origin. That's a really impressive feat. That's years and tons of issues of content that they worked into her origin. And now they don't, they can touch on it if they want in the future, but they kept it very compact. And Larson being able to ride that line, I thought she did a great job. Carol in the books is snarky. She's cocky at times. And she makes mistakes. That's kind of the endearing part about her. And that is conveyed in this movie with Larson. One of the biggest surprises to me was, and we're not going to go into spoiler territory, but as far as the way the Skrulls were implemented into this movie, mm-hmm. I was so surprised because I was looking forward to seeing what they do. I did not expect what ultimately played out, and I was pleasantly surprised. Also, can we just say Goose is... amazing. Goose is amazing. I wasn't going to get through the whole thing without talking about Goose.
Porg Man Matt loves Goose.
And you have like a million cats.
Oh my God, I'm going to buy all of it.
I mean, Goose was great. It was a great character.
But I thought Bree did a lot. And I was really impressed with how much history they blended in and still told a really nice streamlined origin.
Yeah, I think like you could watch this movie twice just to kind of piece together the finer points of Carol's origin and like what happened in her past and like how it affected her.
Well, that's what the biggest thing that surprised me was the amount of like Ms. Marvel type mm-hmm. history that got crammed into this movie. Cause like from the get go, we just assumed it was going to be all of Kelly Sue DeConnick's work with maybe a little bit of stuff, you know, sort of here and there. There's some Claremont stuff in there.
Brian Reed
stuff in there. Like there's a ton of her pre-Captain Marvel, you know, comics history in this movie. And so from like, you know, one of the things as comic fans that we love about these Marvel movies is, you know, being able to spot all that stuff and see where, you know, how all of this, you know, the stuff that we grew up reading and loved influenced, you know, the live action sort of adaptation of it all. And I think this movie nailed it in that regard. I was way more of a fan of the buddy cop angle, you know, between Carol and Nick than I thought I was going to be. And it was a way bigger part of the movie than I thought it was going to be. It's a movie that Brie Larson basically played two characters in. And inevitably at the end you get, you know, like a black and white cookie, you know, it's one full thing that's just at the end great. And so the biggest question I have more is, does a second Captain Marvel movie take place in a present day post Endgame world, or does it take place in a period of time somewhere before that?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a big question for all of us. And I think we'll just move into spoiler territory and maybe we'll start with that one because that's a good place to start. So
nice. If
you're listening, we are going to be moving for the last part of this discussion. We've gone through in our non-spoiler, but we're going to do a full spoiler breakdown of Captain Marvel. If you don't want to hear it, if you haven't seen the movie yet,
pause and come back. Go see the movie.
Pause, come back later. I think we're going to timestamp it for you so you can see this and where it all kind of fits in. But so this is full spoilers. If you don't want to be spoiled, just hit pause, come back when you've seen the movie, and see if you kind of agree with our full breakdown, because we want to get into it. So, last alert. Spoiler alert! Here we go. So, yes, let's start. Okay, so the movie ends, and we basically, to kind of take what you both are saying, one of the biggest twists in the movie is that the Skrulls are not bad guys mm-hmm. in this. They don't have the capability. They are just basically like refugees and scattered who are trying to just survive while the Kree are actually trying to wipe out the last of them. So it was kind of misleading to say this movie was the Kree Skull War because it's kind of like the Skrulls are really down.
It's not even a war.
It's not even a war anymore. It's like an extermination. Like, yeah. I mean, Ronan's literally just going with ships and trying to like bomb the hell out of the last of the Skrulls everywhere they find them. Like, and so Talos, the guy played by Ben Mendelsohn, is actually just trying to find his family.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God.
He's great in this. Very funny and personable kind of guy. And I mean, probably the best guy in like green alien makeup.
Oh my God.
To me, it feels like this is the most like Ben Mendelsohn a character that I think, like, if I were to meet Ben Mendelsohn in real life, I would expect him to be.
Yeah. I mean, same here. Yeah. And so like he's just trying to find his family and like his like clan or however. I mean, he has a real nuclear family, but also his clan. He's a very kind of, you know, Skrull loving guy, and he's trying to just save the last of his people and steal this light warp engine so he can get to some region of the galaxy where the Kree won't reach them. And so basically at the end, Carol kind of has to find out that, Yon Rogg betrayed her and killed the real Mar-Vell, who was Annette Bening.
Gender flip. My God.
Can't wait for this.
Loved it.
Mar-Vell's a girl in the MCU.
Oh, suck it.
Yeah. Mar-Vell. And Carol blew up the, tried to do the noble thing and blow up the warp drive. And this was like, I mean, this is all the classic stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, and ended up absorbing, they only say it in one line, which I think people are going to be very confused about, but she absorbed Mar-Vell's power, because we don't actually see Mar-Vell ever use power, but mm-hmm. she, I mean, Mar-Vell was unique for some reason that I'm mm-hmm. sure we'll find about later. Mm-hmm. But, and if you know the comics history, you know that. So she absorbs this power, and then, like, she just gets gaslit for all her life by the Kree, into thinking, like, they made her powerful, and, like, that's what, and she's supposed to serve, you know, the good of them. But then she kind of breaks free, and now she becomes her own person. She chooses to go off with the Skrulls to help them find a new home world to kind of populate and survive on. And that doesn't explain why she's gone for 20 years, because she has, we see she has what kind of close ties she has on Earth. And, you know, that end scene where she's saying goodbye to kind of Maria and her daughter is, like, really tragic, because you're like, man, you ain't coming back for, like, 20-plus years or something.
Or we don't know
that, or we don't know that she came back. Yeah. But as far as we know, like, Carol doesn't show up again until the post-credit scene, which was very exciting. We'll just spoil that right now.
Might as well.
She shows up. Yeah, it's Avengers Endgame right after the decimation. They're in Avengers headquarters. They found Fury's beeper, and then they're kind of watching it, and they're still counting all the numbers of people who are gone, and then, like, the beeper turns off, and, like, they're freaking out, and, like, Scarlet Witch and Cap, and I think Rhodey's there. They're all freaking out, like, this thing has stopped doing what it's doing. Like, what does that mean? What does that mean? And they, like, turn around, and, like, she's a horror right movie there. Jump scare. Oh, like, Carol's, like, right there, and she just is like, where's Fury? And it looks like her outfit's different. Yeah. She looks older. She looks like she's been through some crap, like, kind of war-torn or haggard, and, like, she's just like, where's Fury? And that's the end. So, yeah, there's a big question, like Jim raised. Like, so she goes off with these Skrulls to find another homeworld, and what happens in the, 20-plus years between that moment and where we are now in, like, mm-hmm. the present-day MCU? Did she ever come back, and we just don't know? Or has she been out in the galaxy doing stuff? Is there a big Kree-Skrull war that continues, and how it affected the Kree Empire, which was very broken up by the time we saw Guardians? Like,
did the Skrull Empire rebuild and try and come
secret,
back?
You know, and all of that, because that's a big thing. Like, you keep waiting for that to happen in the movie, but Ben Mendelsohn's character doesn't turn yet. But this is, like, how the Skrulls could have amassed power again mm-hmm. in secret and gathered mm-hmm. together, and then they'll come back eventually. So. Yeah. Yeah, all that happens.
Well, it's so interesting, too, because when you see Captain Marvel in the post-credit scene, she's got a slightly new costume.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, where did that come from? Like, is that, you know...
And it looks almost like Imperial or military, like, way it's designed. It has, like, kind of gold shoulderings and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's real. It says a lot, with, like, again, without saying anything at all, really. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so the future of this franchise is a big question. I mean, it's probably the biggest question, because there's so many doors that this movie opens up.
Right. The thing that I hate,
Tesseract in Mar-Vell is now a huge thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because, like, basically the storyline is Mar-Vell was a Kree spy, was obviously, like, a Kree kind of champion, became a spy to look out on Earth and look after, I guess, because the Kree had, you know, investments and settlement and the Terrigen Mist, all of this stuff is connected. From Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that, mm-hmm. was spying on us, developed this white warp drive, realized the Kree Empire was wrong and kind of defected, and realized did it to help the Skrulls, was hiding Skrulls on a orbital space station where she somehow got a hold of the Tesseract, which is another big reveal in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
To make the warp drive, she needed an energy source, which was the Tesseract, which makes sense to help you jump through space. You use space stone. Mm-hmm. So, and... somehow got that, and now we have to explain how the Tesseract got from Howard Stark finding it in the ocean in the 50s to Mar-Vell and up in the space station where it sat, till this movie puts it back in Fury's hands, where he has it until he kind of opens it and gives it to Selvig, with Loki watching his over his shoulder and Thor. So that's a lot of ground to cover.
It's a lot of ground to cover, which is why I would actually be perfectly fine with a sequel that takes place
Is that too much like Wonder Woman? People are going to naturally draw that conclusion.
I would Godfather to it, like, myself. Yeah. Like, I would have Carol having to figure out, like, things are harder than with these Skrulls, and what's happening is not quite what she thinks, and have it be related to flashbacks of things that mm-hmm. happen. Because I would like to see more from Annette Bening and her time as Mar-Vell and all that stuff, to, like, whatever she was doing with the Tesseract and this warp drive, and, like, whatever parts we may not know that leads to a bigger Kree-Skrull war storyline, and how Carol maybe shuts down this whole intergalactic conflict, resulting in, like, the Accusers breaking away from the Kree Empire, which signs the peace treaty by the time Guardians has started and all that stuff. And, you know, her being the force that made all of that happen.
Oh my God, what if they make it a Disney Plus show?
I mean, that'd be good.
I'd watch that.
I'd watch Mar-Vell. I mean, it's like a spy show about an alien. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Why not? I'm in. So, like, yeah. So, yeah, we did the scroll turn, the Kree reveal, like, yeah, Mar-Vell.
And there's the Tesseract. So much flirking.
Oh yeah, flirking
goose. So happy.
I was gonna say, were we gonna?
I'm so
happy. How much goose are we talking about?
Oh my God, I'm so happy.
Yeah, well, ironically, goose is related to something I think will be something controversial to come out of this for like hardcore MCU fans, which is the origin story of Fury's eye.
Yep.
Because, but I think that's for me. I will say, okay, so Fury's eye. You find out throughout the movie they keep playing this gag where you think Fury gets in these fights and stuff,
yeah,
and he gets his injuries, and they're like, "How's your head or your eye?" And he's like, "Oh, it's fine," and he just keeps like just getting a couple like little stitches or something. But then at the end, when like everything's over, and like he's just on the ship with the
cat, he's holding the cat.
He's holding the cat.
You don't hold cats like that.
And like he's just like talking to him. This cat he thinks is his buddy throughout this whole thing. And then the cat, just, who's an alien, just scratches him across his eye really badly. And he thinks he's going to heal up because the cat's a flirkin. Like, it doesn't heal, and he loses his eye. And at the end, he's trying to, like, pick out a new eye, and he can't make a decision. Of course, we know he's going to go with the iPad. But I love it because this movie did a good job, and I think Sam Jackson doesn't get enough credit for just completely changing your paradigm for who this character
is. I agree, yes.
In this, he's, like, the friendly kind of... Yeah.
He's jovial,
Stormy,
even.
Jovial,
yeah.
Kind of hopeful Nick Fury. He hasn't seen so much crap yet. Like, he's not.
And he said that in interviews, but I'm going to admit to not to being like, oh, okay, it's going to be, it'll be a little light. Yeah. But no, he was right. He totally changed
it up. This is a whole different Nick Fury. And it's a really fun Nick Fury. And so, like, it's just, I think I love that, like, he just doesn't ever say anything about this eye. And he just kind of, like, lets the stories of people who are so scared of him.
Because when he comes up to him and he's like, oh, you got it because you were being tortured by the Kree? And he's like, yeah. Yeah, you know, and he just lets
like,
it go.
Yeah, he's just like, eh.
Believe what you're going to believe.
Yeah, and then, like, it's just this whole myth that he has. And it's funny because it's, like, a secret that only, like, him, Carol, and, like, Maria
know
for sure. Yeah. And, like,
I kind of hope is, like, a weird special feature on, like, the home release where it's just, like, stories that Fury's told people about what happened to his eye just to, like,
That would be great. That would be, like, a great... thing like just like a short of like SHIELD agents in a mess hall like telling like you know like the Batman episode like I heard like and you could just like do like a little thing of like their versions dramatized versions of what they think happened to Fury
and again like, giving credit to the directors of finding new ways to implement stories that we know from the books. One of the most memorable sequences with the Flirkin has to do with Rocket because comes on the ship of Captain Marvel's ship, and he's the one pointing out that's not what you think it is. In this movie, that's Talos.
Yeah.
And they kind of switch that up, and he's the one standing like, that's not, no, I don't want to touch that. And it's that same back and forth of like, I told you.
Like, he's the only one who knows that this little cat
is not
a cat.
What it is,
this
you know?
Dangerous beast with like a pocket dimension in its belly that eats the Tesseract with these massive tentacles that like it spits out of
And he's
mouth.
Got the muzzle, which he has in the books. Like, there was so many little touches that, again, just reference, but it doesn't have to go overboard. You don't have to do the thing scene by scene.
For longtime fans, it was great.
I love it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to just, a lot to talk about the MCU, just trying to plot how the Tesseract has bounced around and
that was cool. I
how
didn't see that,
that stuff could affect Carol because she's, I mean, her powers are basically a superpowered Kree and a blast of space stone energy merged together into like one person and what all that means. And yeah, because even at the end, I mean, there's questions like, does she like go warp drive alongside that ship? Like, how does that all work in that last shot?
Yeah.
When she just flies off into space and like all of that. And how is she back on Earth just like that? Like, you know, all this stuff that this
got
movie,
lots of questions.
Yeah, this movie raises.
Good sequel fun.
We're going to have a lot of.
But it also sets Carol up. It does an absolute job of being like, if there was anyone who was going to go toe to toe theoretically with Thanos,
this would be it.
Yeah,
this is the character.
You come out of this movie. Believing that, okay, I can see how she turns
tides. It is very satisfying. The sequence when she finally powers up fully and does that whole nine. I mean, there's just great fight sequences. I mean, they throw it in No Doubt, you know, on
that was
Carol,
great.
Which is on
this
the nose.
Soundtrack is
but it
awesome.
Works for this version of Carol. The soundtrack is a little on the nose, but it works. Yeah. And like, yeah, her just kicking ass and like just taking names and then taking out like a whole armada of accuser ships, and Ronan's just like, you know, coming back, which is one of my favorite lines because it is Ronan. Like, we're coming back for the weapon, and they're like, sir, like, what, you know, the thing, the drive? No, the woman. Yeah, like, you're like, oh man. So like, yeah, so yeah, this was a pleasant surprise, Captain Marvel. I want to see this movie again. I really want to see more of Brie Larson's Carol Danvers, because I think it's a unique Carol Danvers. I think she made her own Carol Danvers.
She did.
And I think it's very good. She's funny, kind of witty, kind of quirky, and very cute. Like, I love the sequence of her fighting in the ship without her boots for like the whole
time.
That
was great, yeah.
Because I love the physical comedy in this. I'll end just by saying I think it's going to be underrated, but the physical comedy in this is great. Like, her and her stunt doubles, the amount of times Carol like slams into things, like falls on her ass, slips, and like... Yeah. Like, just like kind of just throws her body in.
And that's
stuff.
Her, though. Yeah. Like, that's exactly. Why. It's, yeah. That's,
and it's doing all this without her boots on and running around barefoot in a skull ship, just like beating somebody with like iron things in her arms. Just great. And Brie Larson really pulls that off.
Like. The last thing I just want to say really quick is, like, having watched the interviews with the directors, I was not anticipating the movie being this funny. Because,
yeah, I agree.
Because, I was watching these and I was like, they felt like in interviews the most non-MCU type directors compared to everyone else we've gotten who's worked, you know, in the MCU. And so when I saw like just how funny it was, I was like, oh damn. Like, that's
I was impressed.
and like James Gunn funny at parts, like, weirdly offbeat funny. And Ben Mendelsohn, I think, gets a lot of credit for that.
Just sitting around a table.
Yeah, that whole house scene in the middle, I think we were talking about, there's a scene in the middle where the movie could have completely gone off the rails. It's a house scene. Where Carol and them and her team, Fury and Maria, meet up with like Talos, and that's where you learn the Skrull turn and the whole secret of that. And that could have gone off the rails, but like, Ben Mendelsohn makes it so great with like, and he's even like a science guy reference. Like,
that, oh, no, the science guy.
You're supposed to be my science guy. But like, yeah, so great humor and stuff. So go see Captain Marvel if you're a Marvel fan. And if you are, why are you still listening to this in spoiler section? But I mean, go see it anyway.
They may have seen it last night by the time when this one comes out.
So. Sure. But go see it again, because I am, because I want to see a lot more of the details now that my anticipation's out of the way. Mm-hmm. So that'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. Again, if you want to listen to new episodes, you can always find new episodes on the site when we post them. We also have an RSS feed you can subscribe to. You can also go to Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, and iHeartRadio and subscribe there. And if you do, leave us a good review. If you want to continue the conversation or let us know anything you thought like about Captain Marvel or anything else, you can find us on Twitter at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can just talk to me at Kofi Outlaw. That's KofiOutlaw.
You can hit me up at Matt Mueller CB.
And at Jim Viscardi.
And if you leave us a good review, we will be picking good reviews and reading them on the air. We wanted to do a little bit of Captain Marvel talk today, so I think next week we're going to end the segment and go through a lot of them. So the weekend, listen, leave your review. If we read your review on the air, we'll send you a comicbook.com t-shirt. So
swag.
Yeah, so you get something for basically doing half of nothing, but make that half of nothing effort. We appreciate it. This is it. Comic Book Nation, you guys have a good day. We're out.
Higher, further, faster, baby.
Higher, further, faster.